This is a CBC podcast.
This week in the legislature, one of the responses to the throne speech was personal. Jared Clark is an NDP MLA and a dad. He says during the recent election campaign, his kids were the target of the Premier's short-lived change room policy.
The Premier put a target on the backs of my two 12-year-old kids. He held a press conference to stoke fear and outrage about two kids at an elementary school. While my children's picture was circulating on social media identifying them. While unimaginable hate was raging down on my family. I have sat in this chamber as an MLA since October of last year, and this is the second time that this premier in 1 year has decided to attack trans kids, some of the most vulnerable people in our province, all presumably because he thought it was a good political strategy. The first was, of course, Bill 137. Really, the fact that these are my kids is frankly irrelevant. But what I will say is, when people show you who they are, believe them.
That is opposition MLA Jared Clark. As you heard, he says the Premier owes his kids an apology. For more on whether they got one, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan. Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what happened?
It's a really good question, and I think that was something that caught for sure caught me off guard. We hear the throne speech debates, and it's usually, you know, thank yous and how I got here's and, you know, a bit about the personal story of the person, and you don't really pay much attention to them. I heard Jared Clark, and you know, we knew in the background what was happening, but we didn't report on this. We, as in the Leader Post, ourselves. It did come out during the campaign, and it was
some publications posted it. Picks, everything,
and then that came through on social media. So his kids were outed, and us knowing that, I wasn't sure if Jared Clark was going to go there. Well, he really went there, and then some. And the fact that Premier Scott Moe was sitting there the entire time and listened to that 12-minute speech of Jared Clark saying, "You put a target on my kids' backs. You need to apologize. You're targeting trans kids. You're punching down all those things." Was really remarkable, and it's something I've never seen before there, and I don't recall having heard a speech, even in passing, someone telling me a speech like that, where the person was so personally affected by something done by the other party, and that person that they're holding responsible is the premier. During the campaign, you mentioned that was something the change room policy came up. It was kind of out of nowhere. It was the day after the debate. It wasn't in the platform. It wasn't discussed during the debate. We're all wondering where this came from. And here it's, you know, centered around Jared Clark's kids.
What do you make of this?
It's a sad moment in the legislature. What I make of it is I probably have more admiration for Jared Clark than I do. That was an amazing speech. And I have admiration for him as someone who has made himself the target as opposed to his kids, because he's getting pilloried on social media by just the worst of the worst of the trolls. If it was me as a dad, I think I would have been a lot more angry. I think he was incredibly controlled. I think it was an incredible speech. I think he did it and asked for a statement on it. He didn't want to speak about it afterwards, but he did give the statement, said, "Well, I did it for the obvious reasons, because I wanted to look the premier in the eye and tell him this. I wanted to look the government in the eye and tell them this. And I also wanted some good to come of this. I don't know if that good is going to come of this. I don't know if there's an ounce of regret by the news organization that created this whole fiasco. I think they're cruel. I think they're horrible people. I just really do. I think there is an element within the government that fits that description as well, because I don't doubt for a moment what Mr. Clark is saying, that the government indeed did know about his children well in advance. I think there is a direct connection through Jeremy Cockerell, who spoke on this issue before, about knowing full well that who was involved. As Mr. Clark said, it doesn't really matter who was involved. But the fact of the matter is that the government proceeded with this policy with little regard for the consequences. And now Scott Moe is realizing there's consequences to this. And he's trying to send out this message of, well, every child in school needs to be protected and everything else, which is the right message. Why in the hell did someone not tell him that was the right message in October? And I think that speaks to the morals of this government. I think it speaks to the morals of Scott Moe not knowing and realizing that instantly. I don't buy for a second that, gee, I got caught up in whatever his explanation was as to why he did it when he explained on Cabinet Day that this is what he did and this is what he – like a smart leader, a morally strong leader would have basically said, no, I'm putting an end to this now. This is where we draw the line. Scott Moe did not do that. And I think, as Jared Clark said, that's probably going to be his legacy.
You guys, this all is taking place in an assembly where the premier did promise better behavior, even if not particularly specific to that matter. What's the tone been this first week?
So chill, like incredibly chill. That aside, and that part of it was in the throne speech, and this is something I haven't seen in the throne speech either. There was a paragraph at the end dedicated to be on your best behavior. We're going to be on our best behavior. We have to be better. We have to be better examples. Now, that could be down to don't text the speaker, don't allegedly bully the speaker.
Yeah, there's lots to do better on, isn't there?
But there's a new speaker, Todd Gowdy. The government had, you know, basically three choices, and Todd Gowdy was sort of the overwhelming favorite, and he's now the new speaker, the MLA for Melfort. And one of his first messages was, I expect you to all to be better. And he did also say, you know, he didn't name him, but Kinchel, they obviously only MLA that's ever been in opposition for the government. And he said, you know, I could tell that maybe there's some people on our side that haven't experienced that, don't know what it's like, and don't know the frustration necessarily of not being government, being
the
in opposition
humility,
for a long time.
Perhaps,
yes.
Yeah.
And so that may change behaviors. It's only going to be another week and a half of the sitting, very short. I'd expect the spring to be a much different tone because they'll be back and there'll be bills and all that sort of stuff. But for so far, so good as far as behavior goes.
Have you seen decorum like this before? Because I noticed you were on social media saying like you could hear a pin drop, and for quite a period of time, because it often doesn't last that long.
I was alone with my thoughts. Just scared. It was incredibly quiet, and I haven't seen this. I don't, as Adam said, it's not going to last. I think Speaker Gowdy's erring on the side of caution, and almost to the detriment of the place, because what is going to happen, or the real litmus test here, is when the government does something that the government needs to be held to account for, and whether he is willing to do that. And I don't think by basically coming down a little harder on a few words like rhetoric or anything else is really changing it. It comes down to a couple individuals. A couple of them aren't in the legislature anymore, like Don McMorris, who isn't the worst offender, but Bronwyn Eyre and everything may not have been the worst offender. Jeremy Harrison hasn't said anything. It's no longer government house leader. It's changed the tone of the entire place. And others take their lead from individuals who behave badly. And this is got under control under Scott Moe's watch. And I think he's taking somewhat responsibility for that now, saying that I'm, you know, putting down my foot and there's going to be no texting the speaker and, you know, in essence, bullying the speaker. But I guess we'll see. We'll honestly see when, as Adam says, when comes the spring and when the rubber really hits the road with the budget and other matters. You also have a very big, loud, and I think boisterous and maybe a little arrogant opposition that really wants to get into it with government, separate from the whole issues related to Jared Clark, which are more legitimate reasons to get into government. There's people out there that are just political, angry, and want to mix it up. And I think sooner or later the government will find that. So if you're asking me if it's going to last for very long, nope, I don't think so.
Speaking of angry and wanting to mix it up, the incoming president wants 25% tariffs maybe on Canada and Mexico, and we know that's a huge concern in Canada. The prime minister called a virtual meeting. What do we know about what came from that?
I think what the premier has said and what he told us when we asked him, it was a very lengthy conversation with us, the media, about, you know, what he was hoping for. A lot of Team Canada talk, a lot of let's put up United Front. You know, Scott Moe goes to Washington very frequently. They have contacts down there. He name-dropped the new Secretary of the Interior as the North Dakota governor and a relationship he has there. But I think a couple of points that Scott Moe made that stuck out to me. One is that the separate there should be a separation between trade issues and then immigration and border security, drug issues, things like that. So he doesn't agree with those being tied together. The second thing was he suggested that the CBSA be beefed up by being included in the military and, you know, the Canadian military joining with the CBSA, some sort of partnership or just putting them under one umbrella, and that would maybe beef up border security and that would maybe be a show to the U.S. government, hey, we're serious about this. So those are the two things that from Scott Moe's perspective stood out to me.
And you?
I hope Scott Moe sticks to script as opposed to freelancing, as Adam just described, because that's only going to get us in trouble. We're watching a powerful U.S. government pay very attention to what's happening in Canada and looking for the weak spots. And Daniel Smith, Scott Moe, a few other conservative premiers, a federal opposition leader that sees this as an opportunity to take political advantage are huge weak spots. And the only hope for success is a united front. I think Scott Moe's doing the right thing, by the way, by trying to rely on personal contacts like the former governor of North Dakota. And that's exactly what he should be doing. And as Adam said, he said some of the right things. But talking about the military and the role and how, gee, maybe if we this will go towards the defense spending concerns that Donald Trump wants on NATO. Well, first of all, Donald Trump doesn't know what he wants. I doubt Scott Moe knows what Donald Trump really wants. So I don't really necessarily think this is the thing. Just stick to script and stick to the idea that we actually have legal trade agreements that have been in effect for 35 years or for how long that should actually be abided to regardless of who is prime minister or president, and that you need to not look at the political implications and the opportunity to score political points, and that you need to look at what's best for the Saskatchewan economy. $27 billion going from this province into the U.S. each year or last year. So that's what's at stake.
And we need the money.
We need the money. Apparently, yeah. Corey, we're $500 million more in debt because of crop insurance than we thought we would be.
So. Yeah. Thanks, you guys.
You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.